This is Will's Band of the Week for September 8th, 2010. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will along with Barrett.
Hey everybody.
And someone else is here this evening named Chris.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Hey, good. How's it going, Chris?
I'm doing all right.
Well, welcome back to Fourth Bedroom Studios in lovely Madison, Wisconsin, where we bring you Will's Band of the Week every week. And if you'd like to contact us, you can do that by going to the webpage, willsband.net, or the Facebook page, the Will's Band of the Week podcast page, that is, or email us at willsband@yahoo.com. Or one other thing you can do, one other thing you can do is subscribe from iTunes. Just do a search for Will's Band of the Week, hit the subscribe button, and we will be delivered to your virtual door every week. Okay, so what's going on, you guys?
As opposed to just looking in your window like we do every week.
Right.
Yeah. It'll just be the virtual version of that.
Right.
So I actually have a little piece of music news that I heard just this afternoon.
Sure.
One of the founding members of ELO, I think his name is Mike Edwards, because I just looked it up on Wiki before I came here. He was killed today when a bale of hay rolling down a hill smashed into his car. And this bale of hay weighed 700 pounds, which, I mean, that's kind of a lot. But he died? Isn't that surprising?
Well, I mean, if it comes through the windshield, wouldn't you think?
Why would it come through the windshield? Maybe he was driving a Model T. And it got crushed.
Well, he was driving a van on a countryside road, this article says. Okay, now, if you're driving 50 miles an hour and you hit a 700-pound object, I mean, that's more than enough to kill a person. You know, people
How fast does he go?
Well, I'm just like, speculating. He was driving a white van. I'm glad they mentioned it was white. He was driving a white van along a countryside road in the southwestern county of Devon.
Just seems like it would have bounced off. I mean, I don't know. A bale of hay isn't that dense either, right? It should have just, like, flew apart.
Are we really talking about the physics of a bale of hay?
It's held together by twine.
Well, before the show here, we were trying to think of just random things that could weigh 700 pounds, like a horse.
Yeah, I was thinking like a half a horse.
How much does a deer weigh?
Guys.
Well, you know.
A deer weighs probably let's see.
I don't know, 300 or 400, 500 maybe?
Well, take the legs off, because all the legs together weigh probably 20 pounds.
A legless deer? Is that
saying? They're kind of tall, but they're all torso.
Right.
So the torso is about like a bear. So what does a bear weigh?
with appendages or not?
That would be a pretty thin
without
bear. I say compare it to like a large dog, right? 100-pound dog, you know, a full-size deer. See, we're not deer hunters. See, deer hunters would know this, right? Yeah. But I bet it's, you know, 300, 400, something like that. So this is like two deer hitting your car, and if you're going, I'm just going to speculate, 50 miles an hour. I mean, that's pretty serious. And
big difference if you hit a deer without any bones that was filled with straw, like a bale of hay.
I don't think bales of hay are soft. I think they're pretty dense.
Yeah. Well, how about this? Like, you ever see on TV, they have like motocross racing, and what do they have? Like, if somebody doesn't make a turn and flies off, what do they have there to stop them? Bales of hay. Would they put, you know, horses or dangerous things there to crash into? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's a good point, I guess.
So I'm not saying anything. I guess, and I wouldn't want to be hit by that hay.
And while it was flying at him, he said to it, "Don't bring me down."
Yeah,
you would have thought he would have been struck down by an evil woman.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to think of
there are a lot more of those available.
Yeah.
Out there.
Start looking up ELO songs and let the jokes begin. Let them flow like wine.
He turned to stone just before the impact.
Wow.
All right. That's enough of that.
That's too bad that he died, and sorry that we're making light of it.
I have news. I went to a concert.
You did?
A show, as the kids call them.
But yeah.
In
this
Minneapolis.
One was, but was it good enough to,
was
to
it
get the
of
label of concert?
Is that how it works? I thought show meant just a certain number of people, and then once you get over like a certain number of people, it becomes a concert.
I thought concert meant that it was kind of serious, where you could actually sit down and watch the whole thing and not be diverted. Maybe we never resolved that one.
What show versus concert is?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you wouldn't say, hey, I went to a Foghat show in 1975. It was a concert.
Right. That's right.
I think it's like,
I went to go see a Kiss show.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right. Concert.
You're right. Yeah.
So
okay,
it's
well,
the
anyway.
Magnitude. Yeah.
What Chris saw was apparently a concert. Now, was this the one at the 400 Bar?
Yes, at the 400 Bar in Minneapolis, which is kind of an immigrant neighborhood. It's like the West Bank of the university area, University of Minnesota. But I was thinking the whole time, like I'm sitting there by myself at this show, this is one of the best things ever about being a male. It's like you can just go to a concert by yourself in a random bar, kind of a dingy bar, and not have to worry about anything. And then just That's jump true. On, like I just, you know, have a few drinks, jump on the train, and head home, no problem.
You don't have to worry about your safety.
Not well, I mean, I'm kind of pretty, so...
it could be dangerous for you, yeah.
But yeah, I we were having taken a family vacation up to the Twin Cities, and I found out this, I was supposed to go see Y Oak in Madison on two nights before, and went and even bought a ticket without realizing that, oops, we're going to be on this family trip. So we go up to the Twin Cities, and that's how it usually works. They usually play Madison, either like Milwaukee, Twin Cities, or whatever. So I figured, oh, they'll probably be up there in a couple days. So I looked it up. Sure enough, Y Oak was there, opening for Lou Sebado. So
Lou Sebado.
Lou Barlow.
Oh, Lou Barlow from Sebado, duh.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. So I hopped on the light rail there and headed on up, went to the show. And it was just an absolutely fantastic show. I'm sitting there in the bar before the show, and there are all these people in their 50s and 60s there. And I was like, they must have like a really knowing, like cool-ass old people scene here, that there are all these people here. And I heard one of the old guys talking to some younger girl, and he's like, yeah, I saw LL Bondi here a few weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, well.
That's good.
No, it's AA Bondi. But so there are all these old dudes there, and I found out that the opening band, there were three bands, the opening band was a band from Chicago called Young Man, and, you know, not a very good name. And one of the members was from St. Paul. So it was essentially like every family member that he ever had was there at this show. And the show was kind of strange because there were three bands. So the place was packed full of this guy's family for the first show. Then people started to move out when Y Oak started playing. And then when Lou Barlow started playing, it was almost empty. So it's like in reverse. Like,
wow.
It's not like your typical show where it starts out kind of empty and then builds up to the headliner. It was kind of that in reverse. But the Y Oak show was absolutely awesome. I talked to the band afterwards. It seemed to be really, really nice. So I had a great time.
Cool.
You switched over from calling it a concert to calling it a show by the end.
Yeah.
I did. Well, you kind of talked me out of concert. I mean, it didn't seem to be like a big production.
Were you sitting down?
I was standing.
Okay. And it was like a few hundred people.
The 400 bar is small, isn't it?
Maybe 50 people.
50. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really small place.
A small show.
Yeah.
If it's the same as it was 25 years ago when I lived there. I mean, it was there. I mean, that's been around a long time. 400. I bet the Replacements played there.
It's
early
probably
days.
Like frequency sized.
Wow.
It's not.
Where did they play in Madison?
At the Frequency. And they actually said that the Frequency, the sound there is one of the best places that they played. Like they liked how small it was. And apparently the acoustics there are, it's one of the best venues that they've played, they thought. They thought the show in Minneapolis was just kind of so-so.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Good.
So, cheers to Madison for having good acoustics.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good. Got to have a plug for Madison whenever we can. So, any other music news or any loose ends you'd like to tie up? Chris, you want to give us any reviews of all the music we've been talking about in your absence the last couple months? Were you shocked and appalled at any of our selections?
No, let's see. Waves, I loved. Love the Waves album. Arcade Fire, I'm just kind of so-so on.
Yeah, me too.
Let's see. I don't know. I listened to Why Oak, that album, The Knot, like, honestly, for 2 weeks straight, and nothing but. Somehow I just never got sick of it. I looked at iTunes the other day, and I'd listened to it like 65 times.
Okay, you're exaggerating, but you...
No, right? It's 65 times on my iTunes that I've listened to that album.
I think my record is like 24.
Yeah?
Well, there are some in my library that have a lot of plays on them, but some of them are my kids listening to them too. You know, I think it tallies everything. Mm. Like whenever you sync another iPod into iTunes, it's going to add the plays. So like for myself, I rarely go over like 20. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, 65. I just can't get sick of it.
So did this become part of your body as we were discussing in an earlier podcast? Is it part of you now?
Yes. Somehow chemically in my brain, that album has become a part of me.
You must know those songs pretty well by now.
I do.
Yeah, I mean, there's a small list of things that I've listened to 65 times. I'm not sure.
But, well, I probably listened to it for once a day for, I guess that would be
for 65 for, days for or so.
2 months, something like that.
Did this came out in 2009, didn't it?
Yeah, late in 2009.
Yeah, so it can't make your top 10 now.
No, and it didn't make my top 10 last year, so I kind of got onto it late.
Yeah.
Hmm. Much like one of the albums we're going to talk about tonight.
About it right now, at least.
Hmm?
I said he's getting a chance to talk about it right now.
Right, yeah. Well, I think before you got here, Barrett, Chris he actually divulged one of the albums that will be on his top 10. And I said, do you really want to do that? Because that's pretty valuable intellectual property, you know, to actually be saying what's going to be on your top 10.
Yeah, we weren't on the air.
Yeah, that's
figured
true.
I'd go with it.
Yeah. I won't repeat it. I feel like it's like highly valuable information now that I possess, and I will not repeat it. Okay, so we have a couple bands this week, and Barrett brought the first one to our attention. So why don't you talk about Sunny and the Sunsets?
Well, I got a kind of a care package for my friend, well, Chris and I. Well, we're all friends, really, with Steven. At NPR with some promos and things that he wanted to share with me to see if I'd like them. And this was in there, and I remember hearing about it, maybe reading a review or two, but it's Sunny and the Sunsets. I hadn't heard it. And yeah, you know, the name was just it's something that you're going to remember. It's a little bit goofy. So that was the first thing out of the box that I listened to. As Chris is dropping the disc on the floor.
Throwing stuff around.
And, you know, I listen to a lot of things, and we all do, that are, you know, eventually we start to like them, but at first it doesn't really make much of an impression on you. But this one immediately grabbed me because it's unlike anything else that's being made out there today that I listen to, at least. And it's by a guy, I think his name is Sonny Smith. His first name is Sonny. For sure, and he's from San Francisco, and the Sunsets, I think, are like a just sort of a rotating cast of his friends. And this album came out, I think, in the spring, early spring, and you know, we just got around to hearing it in the late summer / early fall. So anyway, I shared it with Chris, and Chris seemed to like it quite a bit, so we're going to talk about it today.
Yeah, this wasn't one of those ones where it had to grow on me. I liked it right away.
Right,
it hooked me. I mean, it's got kind of a throwback sound, really.
Yep. Yeah, and it's just kind of, you know, we mentioned things as being lo-fi a lot, and this isn't like amateurishly recorded, but it is. You know, there's just sort of a spare sound to it. You know, so anyway,
what's your song?
I like a lot of the songs, but I am going to choose number 4, which is called Planet of Women.
Once again, Barrett picks a song with filth.
Yeah, we do need to add the explicit tag on iTunes for that reason, because he said a bad word. But I don't know. That's most of the songs are kind of silly, I think, and that one probably being the prime example.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. Kind of has like a, I mean, it's not completely lo-fi, but it does have the kind of the do-it-yourself type of ethic to it, where you can tell it's probably him and just a couple friends maybe spending a weekend, you know, not even in a studio,
right,
recording this album. A lot of Beck's early albums are kind of like that, where he was on K Records and he did like One Foot in the Grave, where you can tell, I mean, you can literally hear like cars drive by and the creaking of the floors and things like that, where you can tell it's just kind of them sitting around drinking and recording it as is. So
yeah, I mean, it's easy to imagine just somebody pushing record on something they're playing at a coffee shop, like playing these songs.
But it's really more sparse than it is lo-fi, I think, because because it's really a good recording, you know. I think it's got a good dynamic range. It's not like you know, garage rock or something.
Yeah, sparse would probably be a better word.
Yeah. I thought of a couple things when I heard this. There's some kind of old punk rock influence in this somewhere. You know, it's like folk punk or something. I don't know where I'm getting that from, but it's sort of that there's something a little bit rebellious or something.
Right. Well, I think a lot of it sounds like Jonathan Richman.
And I'm not that familiar with Jonathan Richman. I was thinking a little Lou Reed, maybe.
Well, the first Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers came out in, well, it's probably about 74 or 75, or they recorded them then, and then I think it came out in 76. But, you know, that was kind of proto-punk, and, you know, along with, obviously, Lou Reed, and it's interesting that you say that, because I know that Chris thought some of the songs sounded like the Velvet Underground.
I made that comparison this morning. I said, isn't this maybe a little bit Velvet Underground-y? And that's one of our hard and fast rules, is that you can take any band name and put E at the end of it, and it becomes a verb. Wait, it becomes a adverb? Adjective?
That would be an adjective.
Yes. I'm the writer.
Yeah, come on. Get your word definitions right.
Well, he was
right.
Getting confused because L-Y words are often adverbs.
It's a gerund phrase, maybe? An onomatopoeia? All right, go on. Jonathan Richman. I believe you have some more on the Jonathan Richman.
Well, I think the Jonathan Richman, Sunny in the Sunsets, sort of hits on both parts of his career. I mean, his original early stuff, which included Jerry Harrison, who later on went on to be in the Talking Heads and have some solo stuff.
Isn't from Milwaukee.
I was going to say, isn't he from Milwaukee?
Yes. It went on to be a big producer.
Yeah.
And produced a lot of good albums. I can't, none of them really come to mind.
Most of the good ones, though, I think. He was.
Most good albums are produced by Jerry Harrison?
Most of the ones, yeah. Going back quite far.
I know, I remember he produced a live album from the band Live.
Was it a studio album or a live album?
It was a live studio album.
The band Live?
That's confusing.
Do you remember the band Live?
Yeah, I remember them because I actively disliked them.
Alone.
I just couldn't stand his vocal delivery.
I just remember
he just had this like album. I'm self-important. I don't know. I couldn't take it.
Yeah. But anyway, so that original kind of proto-punk stuff that they came out with, you know, the song Roadrunner. That's here's the dog. Hello, doggy.
You can play some of this.
And then some of the, you know, after the band broke up, he recorded stuff that's a little lighter. Subject matter tends to be kind of goofy, and it sounds most of it like the Sunny and the Sunset song. So,
well, maybe we should. You brought some Jonathan Richman with you, but maybe we ought to play a little more sample of Sunny and the Sunsets first.
Okay. Somebody else want to pick a song?
Yeah, I'll play my selection now. This song is called The Auris, and anytime you get la-la-las and na-na-nas in a song, you pretty much got me hooked, so we'll go with this.
Those fade outs, aren't I?
You are. That was an expert one.
Yeah, normally in songs like that where, you know, they're really catchy and they have na-na-nas, you think of like big overproduced songs. And then here's one where it's probably a guy sitting in a chair playing the guitar, tapping his foot, and one person on the bongos.
Yep. Somebody's doing some snapping their fingers.
Yeah, it's just as good, just as catchy as any of those, you know, super produced songs. So
I agree. What is an ori? Spelled H-O-U-R-I-S.
Pronounced it Ori.
It looks Ori's. Like Auris.
Yeah.
Like
I think that's what I said. I said Auris. Yeah. Is it Ori?
I thought. Didn't did
I?
He?
I think Chris said Auris, and I think in the song he said the Ori's. But I had never heard that word before either. H-O-U-R-I-S.
Is it a song about Robert Ori, the basketball player? Big Shot Bob.
No, that there's Detlef Schrempf. One's really about a basketball player. But.
Five-time world champion Robert Ori.
Yeah, I don't know what an Ori is.
Well, I'll throw a pick in here because this is one where there was just, and this is like almost like a cop-out pick, but I think the first track is like the one that really grabs you first. And I like these. I actually like these more just listening to them just now when you give it some attention. But just like putting it on casually, which I've only done, you know, listened to this album like twice through, just kind of casually. But I think track one is you know, kind of an attention grabber. So let's play a little bit of that one. By the way, the album is called Tomorrow Is All Right. And the first track is called Too Young to Burn.
That is a good one. I'm gonna, if I can, choose one more. And I think the second song sounds the most like the Velvet Underground and Lou Reed influence that you guys are talking about. I think so. Maybe you'll agree. That one's called Death Cream.
You guys ever been to the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood of San Francisco?
Just when I was young with my parents.
I have not.
I've been there once. I was maybe 30, maybe my early 30s.
In the summer of
when you were a kid.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1967.
It was a long time ago. But when I hear this and I just picture that neighborhood, it just like totally does not surprise me that this guy is from San Francisco.
No, I thought you were going to just randomly... I thought you didn't know that this guy was from San Francisco. I was going to jump in and just blow your mind.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know. And it was a while ago. It was a long time ago that I was only 30. So it's kind of a vague memory, but this has a San Francisco sound, if there's such a thing.
True.
Stereotype in my mind or whatever.
Kind of like the Jefferson Airplane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Grace Slick could come in at any moment and do a little vocal.
I kind of detest bands, albums like this, almost in a way, because they're so simple and so good. And it's like, you know, I sit in my basement and I play my guitar, and I'm not very good, and you're good, and Will's really good. I'm like, why am I not making an album like this? Why am I not just, like, setting up my recorder and doing this?
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe. This kind of feels like an album that anybody with any talent could do.
He might have thought the same thing and then just said, you know what? I'm going to do it.
That's probably what he did.
Yeah.
That's what you can do.
That's right.
I'm not going to do it.
I think you should do it.
I think we've challenged Chris now.
I'll have a song written by the next podcast.
Do it.
Do like the band Garbage did, our Madison, what do you want to call them? They're from Madison. People probably know who Garbage is, right? They got pretty big.
Yeah.
So what they did is there were three or four guys from Madison, and they were toiling away in bands that were, you know, they had a good local following, but, you know, they weren't, like, making money doing it, really. And one of them got an idea. He thought, you know, what we need is we need, like, a, you know, sexpot woman vocalist. And I don't know how they met Shirley Manson.
So they got Butch Vig?
Yeah. So they somehow must have known Shirley or whatever. But then what they did is they recorded a single, but they didn't want people to know who they were. So they sent it to Europe, sort of anonymously or whatever, and then had it, like, mailed back from London to, like, various outlets in the U.S. so people would think they were European. And then this got people to pay attention, whereas if it were, like, you know, three Midwestern nerds who got a woman singer, people would be like, okay, forget it, I'm not going to listen to this. So it sort of got them to listen. So I was thinking Chris could do that. You could record your thing, and nobody has to know that it's just Chris, you know, in his basement. You could do some kind of thing where, you know, you'd be perceived as, like, avant-garde, you know?
Yeah, you don't have to really mail things around anymore, though.
Yeah, that's
so
true. Yep.
Just getting fake email from,
well, yeah,
like,
I mean, you'd have to use different methods now in today's world.
Yeah.
But
what about getting the female singer? Who are you going to get, like,
if I can get a girl to talk to me, I'd be happy to, yeah. No, I was actually in Madison in 93 when Garbage kind of just started out, and I read, like, a news article or something about Garbage, and so I was going to school in Utah at the time. I went out there to a record store, and I'm like, do you have the Garbage album? And the guy was just looked at me, he's like, the what? And literally within a month, you know, their first song was, like, blowing up all over. I'm Only Happy When It Rains, or yeah. I can't even remember what their first song was.
One that they sent overseas, I think, was called Vow.
Hmm.
And that one was not quite that, you know, that just got their start. But yeah, I guess I think of I'm Only Happy When It Rains as being their big one, but I'm not sure if that was it.
I missed a chance to slip in a joke there.
Oh, did I ruin your timing?
No, it's fine. You went to the place and he said, do you have a Garbage album? And he handed you a Soundgarden CD.
God damn it.
Oh, that is good. It was so good that even on the rebound, the joke still worked.
Yeah. I knew something like that was coming.
All right.
You poked a hole in my soul.
All right, what do we got from this Jonathan Richman album? Barrett's going to tell us how now, listening back to a 1974, whatever it is.
Well, these songs, this is all from his solo career, which is like real late 70s and mostly into the 80s. And I think a lot of it sounds like Sunny in the Sunsets, or the other way around, really. So I'll just choose... I'm going to choose what's always been one of my favorite songs of his, The Neighbors. And this is from Action Packed, The Best of Jonathan Richman.
Don't you think that I should go? No, we were just starting to talk now. It was just getting good, don't you know?
But if I leave here in the morning,
yeah,
what will the neighbors tell your wife?
Well, my wife knows me by now, so there's no need to let the neighbors run my life. No, no need to let the neighbors run my life. No, no. Well, it would look suspicious, and I know why they wanna know. They love my wife, but oh, they don't want her hurt. And so, if that's all they see, I wouldn't blame them. Let them go and tell my wife, 'cause my wife should know me by now. So there's no need to let the neighbors run my life. No, no, no need to let the neighbors run my life.
Is that an actual song, or did they just record them talking to each other? Like, it's like somebody came in and recorded a random conversation, right, with, like, me and my wife. Chris, go take the trash out. Didn't you just tell me to take the trash out? Go make me a sandwich.
There's your idea right there. There's just your idea.
Like, spoken word couple arguing set to music.
That's what you have to record. In your basement that you're talking about.
It had the
laundry. I mean, it's hard to pick a song.
It had the finger snap rhythm in that.
Yeah. It's really hard to pick a song like, this is the reason that it sounds like Sunny in the Sunsets, but kind of overall, it definitely does. And
well, yeah, they do have the kind of the man and woman, kind of like the Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros, almost kind of like back and forth.
I was going to compare your pick, Chris, from the Sunny in the Sunsets album to Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros a little bit. There was a little bit of that in there, don't you think?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep, so there you have it. Sunny and the Sunsets came out in the spring of 2010.
Now, iTunes thinks it's an 09, which is interesting. I wonder if it got re-released on a label or something.
When I looked at it on allmusic.com, it said 2009, so...
Well, Fat Possum put it out in 2010.
And that's all we really care about.
So it might have been some kind of a weird licensing thing, but
yeah, we're gonna call it a 2010 release then for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, in our effort to give the listeners the best bang for the buck, we've got a second band tonight, and they're called Stornoway. I stumbled upon these guys, read about them somewhere, I can't remember where, but they're a band from Oxford, and their name comes from a small town in Scotland. And they've got an album called Beachcomber's Windowsill, which I think is pretty good. So before we get into our lively discussion, why don't we just play a little sample? And I'm going to be like totally non-creative again and pick the first track. Because it's good. Did I take your track, Chris?
Yes.
Okay.
But go ahead.
You can come up with another one. I got a backup. Yeah. Okay. Here we go. This one's called Zorbing.
Shining on the ground, the air is cooler, and I feel like I just started uni. Walking backwards to my van, you're at your window, and I'm tripping every time I think of lying in your attic. I can feel the heavens open.
I was telling Chris when I first heard that, I thought Belle and Sebastian immediately.
Yeah, and I didn't hear that at all.
Yeah.
I was.
I can hear it a little bit.
When it kicks into that like little horn part, I can see, you know, kind of like a Dog on Wheels type of...
Right.
It's got to get that kind of vibe.
You know, I have to admit that this part of the homework assignment I did not complete.
You get an incomplete then.
I get an incomplete.
But now you get to hear something fresh.
Analysis.
Yeah.
And
ooh, hot off the press. He doesn't know what he's going to say. This could get crazy.
Like that. That's really unusual. Usually I'm like, I've got it all planned out. Actually, I'm kind of like, I'm like, you know, Brett Favre, and then I shoot from the hip. You never know what I'm going to do, what I'm going to say. I don't know what I'm going to say.
And after the podcast, you need ankle injections? Because you leave it all out on the field?
Right. He does every week.
And he does take pictures of his... never mind.
Yeah, what happened with that story?
They never... There's no evidence. I don't want to see the evidence. I don't think anybody really does.
Somebody's got some evidence. I don't want to see it either, but I want to see him go down. I'm just sick of him.
Well, he's going to, I think, don't you think? He's going to go down this year. He's very talented, but his body can't take it anymore. And at some point this season, he's just going to get decked, and he's just going to barely be able to get up, and it's not going to be pretty. That's just
my
prediction.
Chris and I are going to be, and I don't know about you, if you like to watch people that, you know,
we take pleasure
against
in other people's pain.
Schadenfreude, what do they call that?
Oh, there's no doubt
for that.
Him throwing the interception.
Schadenfreude,
yeah. At the end of the season last year, at the end of the Saints game, that was one of the most joyous moments.
Yeah, I'm gonna be super happy. When I don't know.
So, all right, your instant analysis on Stornoway.
Yeah,
now, I'm gonna talk about B.J. Raji burying Brett Favre up to his neck in the turf at Lambeau Field. I like that song quite a bit. And the conversation that I had with Chris was that he, on hearing the first couple of songs, thought, wow, this is one of the better things I've heard in a while. And I have to admit, that immediately grabbed me. And I feel the same way.
While you were actually grabbing yourself.
Yes.
So you used like a double action there. Well, you're giving away what I said and was going to say. But yeah, that's when I listened to this, I heard the first two songs and I was like, wow, this could be one of the best albums I've heard all year if it keeps going on like this. And then for me, it kind of tails off a little bit. Like the first two, there's some bright spots later on, but you know, I think it's for the most part middle in the rest of the way. But those first two songs are, I think really, really good. So if I had to pick a song, it would be number two, which I don't know what it's called, but it's
called I Saw You Blink.
I caught the sun on my way home
Well, I hate to be too agreeable, but I agree 100% with Chris's analysis. If you had a whole album of songs like those two, it'd be a really great album. But what happens is it kind of gets sort of syrupy, and I think Barrett would even think it's like Glenn Hansard like, you know?
Oh,
it gets like
no.
It gets like really ballady, as long as we're using those types of adjectives.
Right.
And you know, like
Hansard-y.
Half of them, yeah. And like half of them are pretty decent. Half of them are pretty decent. But it gets too much of that, and it makes you wonder, like, why didn't they figure out they were onto something with the first two songs?
That's the whole, and I thought about this as I was listening to the second half. It's like the whole one-hit wonder phenomenon. It's like how these people obviously had it in them, and they understand what a good song sounds like, and they obviously have the ability to do it. So what happens? I mean, these guys are sitting there. They write these songs. They know they're good songs, so they put them 1 and 2 on the album.
Right.
And then, you know, where's the effort for the last 8 songs? I mean, it's just kind of... Clearly, yeah. They knew that their last songs weren't up to the first two. So, I don't know. It's just lack of inspiration, I guess. But
I mean, think about, like, in all the other arts, like, maybe an author has one good book and the rest are like, meh, you know? But we expect bands to be able to put out, and I do, you know, if an album should be pretty consistent, and if it's got some, you know, dogs in it, you're like, wow, what's up with that? But maybe some bands just have a couple of good songs.
And I think for this band, it might be just the style. We think they sound better with their upbeat style, and maybe they like the slow stuff. Maybe their record label person said, you got to put these first two, you know, 1, 2. Who knows? But there is one of the better
Beethoven's
ones.
Kind of like that. Like, yeah. his early stuff, like the first couple of songs, are
yeah.
great.
Yeah. After the fifth.
Then you get in.
He was...
Right.
I mean, it's like the guy was deaf or something.
Right.
Like he went...
Totally.
It's like he couldn't even hear his own music.
You hear this crap?
Yeah. Something
God,
was going on.
I was
yeah.
deaf.
Yeah.
I don't want to listen to this anymore.
People so, are like, Beethoven, can you even hear this?
Yeah.
But let's give the listeners a little example of the slower stuff. I think when they get all the way to the end, the last track is actually pretty good. This one's called Long Distance Lullaby.
If that song can stand for all of the songs that aren't the first or the second one,
mm-hmm.
then I'm going to say that you guys are right on. With your
I think that's pretty
analysis.
Representative. Of
yeah.
I mean, it's not bad, but it's just, you know, it doesn't grab me.
It's funny because his voice...
Why do we keep talking about things grabbing me?
His voice sounds really familiar without... But yet I can't think of who he sounds like.
Like he sounds like one of the guys from the Proclaimers.
Oh, yeah,
one
it could be.
Yeah. And Scottish.
And I would walk 500 miles.
Scottish. It seems like Scottish singers, the accent is stronger than English or Welsh. I mean, you know, like.
This sounds kind of Irish to me, though. I don't know why. I think Irish when I hear this.
Yeah.
They have one song that's like a kind of like a traditional like banjo type of song in there somewhere. I don't know what that really means.
Well, you brought up the banjo. I saw somebody put a, this is apropos of nothing, but you brought up banjos, put a YouTube video on their website, or on Facebook rather, Ban Jovi.
It was Bon Jovi great. Played with the banjo.
Yeah,
yeah.
I wish I'd thought of that. That'd be great.
Bon Jovi.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
That's about
they do
as
like
good
Living
as,
on a Prayer with banjos.
It's about as good as Beatallica, I think.
Beatallica.
Remember we talked about them? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if we've dispatched with Stornoway, can I play a surprise bonus?
Oh yeah,
selection?
Absolutely. Yes.
Is this what you guys were talking about earlier?
No. This is a surprise to
it's
Will
surprise
as well.
To me too. Yeah, I don't even know what's going to happen right now. That's how spontaneous this podcast is.
That's right. This could go any direction right now.
Could. Do you know what you're going to play?
Yeah.
Yes. A few nights ago, I was watching the movie Youth in Revolt, and it's a movie that's very reliant on its soundtrack to kind of set the mood. And I like the movie quite a bit, but there were a lot of really great songs on there that that I had not heard. And so I went out and I got the soundtrack and enjoyed it quite a bit. And probably the song I enjoyed the most was a song from the Fruit Bats called "When You Love Somebody," and it's a it's kind of a central song to the movie. But as soon as I heard it, I loved it, and I thought we could play a little bit of it. Yeah, there's like four lyrics in that song, and they really make good use of them.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It is good.
And this also has a song by Funboy 3, who I had actually not heard of, but apparently Barrett is a fan of.
Yeah, from way back. I love those guys.
See, that song kind of has like a modern sound to it, but it's also got Bananarama in it.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Is this somebody that remixed an old Bananarama song? But it actually is literally from like 1982, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The main guy in Funboy 3 was Terry Hall. He was the lead singer of the Specials. And after their second album came out, he and Linville Golding and, oh man, I can't remember the other guy's name. But three of them split off and did this. They put out two albums, including the one that had this song on it. And I don't think anything sounds quite like that. And like you said, it sounds kind of modern. You know, it doesn't sound like it's almost 30 years old.
Yeah, it is, and it could have been an album that came out last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fun when somebody puts together a movie soundtrack filled with sort of obscure stuff. You know, the person, some creative music person was behind it.
Right.
It's kind of cool.
What was that movie about? Isn't it about a video game or something? Or?
No, it's Michael Cera, who, like, he's kind of a nerd, and he develops, like, in order to get a girl, he develops, like, a second personality, which has a mustache, which apparently denotes that you're daring and, like, right. Yeah, dangerous. So, yeah, that's pretty much the movie. It's Michael Cera and his alter ego with a mustache.
But maybe there's a video game. I think the movie is... I think there was a video game first or something.
I think you're thinking of Tron.
Oh, I'm thinking of Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong, the movie. Yes.
No, Tron is not...
Mario Brothers.
I think that... It, well, whatever. Somebody write in and straighten us out on that. But... because we don't have the internet, we can't check on things.
Right.
If we started fact-checking the things that we said now, I mean...
It's yeah, that'd be a real problem. Yeah.
Send us a list of everything that might be 700 pounds.
Yeah.
A half a donkey. What? Where did that come from?
Half a horse.
Half a horse.
Yeah, I guess a horse isn't going to weigh 1,400 pounds, unless it's a Clydesdale.
All right, guys. I think we're coming up on the 1 hour mark.
All right.
And you know what happens when the podcast is too long? People, you know, they get into it for a while and they're like, when are these guys going to just stop?
The FCC shuts us down.
Yeah.
Dick Cheney's listening in and he like cuts us off.
That could happen. Although not anymore. But a few years ago, it definitely could have. All right. Thanks, you guys. Barrett, Chris, glad to have you all in the studio.
Yep. It was fun. Hopefully the listeners enjoyed it as much as we did.
Then not very much.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk to you guys again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Later, peeps.